You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. Today we're highlighting a vital new voice for inclusivity in rural regions. My guest is Casey Hogarth, co-founder of Major Connections, a nonprofit based in Klamath Falls. Major Connections is on a mission to ensure that individuals with disabilities in rural America enjoy a sense of value and belonging in their communities. Welcome to the Exchange, Casey.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
So tell me about Major Connections.
So Major Connections is a project, a nonprofit started by my wife and I. What really inspired us to start this organization is that our son, his name is Kenan Major, hence the Major Connections, was diagnosed with autism around the age of two. And being natives to Southern Oregon, I mean, we both were born and raised here. We moved home to be close to our family and realized that there was just a lack of place to find a community and connection for the disabled community in this region. And it was a really underserved population and something that was lacking that place to come together and connect with one each other and find resources that could help us through this process.
And so you and your wife, your son is named Major.
And yes, his name's Kenan Major.
Okay. And so he was diagnosed with autism?
Yes, that's correct.
Give me a sense of what autism is for your son.
Yeah, so autism varies for every individual, but for our son, what it looked like was around 18 months, he began to lose some of his language and interest in connection and communication with others. And started to have, you know, some challenges with attention and things of that nature. And it was quite a process to get to the point where we could find the diagnosis. It takes quite a bit of time to get through all of the different testing and different providers you need to see to get to that point. And for us, I'm a physical therapist and my wife is a speech pathologist. So we have more education than some might in this area. And even for us, getting to that point was a difficult challenge. And over the years, what autism has looked like has changed a lot for our son. He's still minimally speaking, but he finds every way he can to communicate, whether it's through gestures or, you know, problem solving on his own. But he still has challenges with that. He has some differences in the way he likes to engage with others, but his mind works in his own unique and very interesting ways.
And how old is he now?
He just turned 5.
So your organization has been around for how long?
We started last August is when we first started the organization. It's been an idea for us for several years. We'd considered maybe moving to find better resources, but we decided that because this is our home and, you know, the loved ones we have here and the community we have here, we wanted to actually, you know, bring the resources here, so to speak, was the goal here. So, yeah, it's been, you know, a process with that. But we started last August to officially create the organization once we made that decision. We had our first fundraiser for it back in October. And then we just finally got into a building back in April. So now we have a space for this. And we just had another fundraiser a couple weeks ago, just a kids consignment sale to start raising some funds to be able to provide the resources we're looking to do.
Well, your mission statement mentions creating inclusive communities where families find belonging. In your view, what does a truly inclusive Klamath Falls look like?
An inclusive Klamath would look like having accessibility and connection at the forefront of events rather than an afterthought to things. You know, oftentimes when we see inclusivity, it's planning an event and then tacking on something at the end to try to make it a little more inclusive. But what we're trying to do with the events we provide and with the space we're building is having that accessibility at the forefront, you know, for all types of disabilities, trying to make it as available to everyone as possible to remove any barriers that might make someone, you know, uncomfortable being there or even prevent people from coming out in the first place to things. Because that's a common thing as well with the disability community is just avoiding events because they're not catered towards their specific needs. So we're trying to make a space that is accommodating to, you know, sensory sensitivities and, you know, mobility, accessibility and all natures of that. And really putting that at the forefront and thinking of how can we make an event in a space that is for these individuals and for everyone rather than, you know, tweaking an event to make it accessible.
Okay, so inclusivity is baked into the architectural design of buildings or events or anything that you do. It's just at the forefront. It's at the center of the thought process.
Exactly.
So beyond just providing services, how do you facilitate connection between families who might otherwise feel isolated in a rural region?
Yeah, so I think removing those physical barriers and accessibility is a big step to that, because it's going to, you know, promote people feeling more comfortable coming to our spaces and events. And part of what we're doing for our nonprofit is going to be having a kids play center to be a space where people, families can come and connect to each other, both those with and without disabilities. And because that space is going to be built for everyone, they remove that fear or avoidance of families that may struggle in other places to come and connect with other families in the area. And I think as our reputation gets out there and people know more, they're going to be more and more comfortable coming to our events because they know we are building ourselves to be accessible to everyone. Aside from that, we're also going to be, you know, we've had a couple of community events that have had good turnouts, and those are promoting engagement between people as well. But we also want to, we're in this building, we're going to be hosting, you know, support groups where people can actually come and start to develop those relationships with one another, with other people who are going through similar challenges. And then, you know, trying to, as we progress, have more frequent events to really build up those relationships and give a place where people feel they can come and find others and find a support group.
And so where's your building located? What's the size space?
So our building is on, it's 4480 South 6th Street. It's one of the main roads through all of Klamath Falls. So it's very centrally located in town. It's a fairly large building. The only challenge we have with it so far, our downstairs space, it's a two-story building, and we are in the process of getting funding to get a lift to that second floor. But the first bottom floor is going to be, it's, you know, 3,000 to 4,000 square feet. It's a large space, and that's going to be the where all of the kids' play area is going to be, as well as where we'll host some of our events and resource groups.
My guest is Casey Hogarth, co-founder of Major Connections in Klamath Falls. It's a nonprofit offering services and connections for people with disabilities in rural regions. Now, you mentioned your events. Tell me about some of the events.
Yeah, so our first event last year was the Dia de los Muertos event. You know, trying to celebrate ability and inclusivity, but also just bringing in different cultures is a big part of this, especially that is my wife's culture. So that was a great place for us to start. I didn't have our own space at the time, so we rented a space at the Klamath Fairgrounds, and we hosted an event there that had, you know, food and music and performers, and we also tried to have activities to provide, you know, and we had a sensory room for anyone that needed to step away into a darker room. And we tried to, you know, even when it wasn't our own space, create that one to be as inclusive as possible. And it was also just a good place to get out and get our name into the community and get to meet some of the people and send out kind of the message of what we're trying to build and bring to town here. And then our most recent one was we had an event that was a consignment sale where we took in clothing, helped people sell some of their clothing, and we took part of that to be fundraising for the nonprofit. We've also kind of assisted in other events. So at the fairgrounds last year, we set up their sensory accommodations room. So it had, you know, dim lights and swings and, you know, soothing things in there to be a sensory regulatory area. We did a similar thing at the Night to Shine in town, which is if you don't know, is a dance that is for all abilities. It's a big community event. We can dance and enjoy music and get dressed up and, you know, have a great evening like that. So we did a sensory room for that as well. And then we also assisted with some Christmas toy drive donation things that were a local group was doing as well.
Well, you've mentioned sensory several times, and I'm sensing that that's a real important piece of the puzzle. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, and I probably mentioned that a little more because of my own son. So with autism, a lot of times we will try to accommodate that by having different sensory areas, which can mean a lot of things, honestly. So for some individuals, they need to help themselves regulate and be kind of centered in themselves and be able to participate in things and enjoy themselves. They need to be, you know, regulated at a good headspace. And for certain people with autism on the autism spectrum, they need, you know, different types of sensory input. So for some people, that looks like getting to an area that's, you know, very quiet. You'll see people with headphones, dark lights, dim things to reduce the sensory input so that they can regulate themselves and then maybe go back out and enjoy some of the other activities with people around, because that can be an overstimulating process for them. But it can also go the opposite way. So some people need extra input, right? So they need things like, you know, swings where they can get some input into their body, or they need light displays and, you know, things that give more input into their body to help kind of ramp up their nervous system. So having a place where we can provide both of those things is important to us, because those needs are very different for different individuals. And that's where my wife's background as well as mine come into play, because as her being a speech pathologist and me a physical therapist, those are things we work on in our profession as well.
And so are your events specifically for people with a variety of different kinds of disabilities, or are they open for anyone and everyone?
We have some of both. So the events that we're hosting that are, you know, public events and our fundraisers are all for everyone, as is our kids center. It's for the entire community to come together and be part of those things. We will have some individualized groups. So, for example, not just for the kids and for those with autism, but we're looking to have, you know, Parkinson's groups, ALS groups, those types of things in town, too, where we can be a resource for those and, you know, use some of our own knowledge to help those people with our professions being what they are, but also bringing in other providers and specialists to come in and help educate during those things. So those events will most likely be for those with disabilities and for their families and caretakers. But all of our community events and fundraisers are for the entire public of, you know, the whole area.
And how do people find out more about that?
We have a website, majorconnections.org. We'll bring you to our website where you can find out more information and find ways to, you know, volunteer or help if you're interested in that. We also have a lot of people locally engage with us on Facebook, because it's a place to get out the news for events a little quicker to some of those things. And that's also just Major Connections is the name of that as well. So, and it has all of our email and phone number and contact information if you did want to reach out for any reason to us.
Gotcha. What are some of the first steps that local businesses or just neighbors can take to be more supportive and welcoming?
Yeah, I think that if the more people can, you know, consider the accessibility as part of what they do, the better off we are, right? Putting that early in your, you know, building planning, your event planning, all of those things, having that be, you know, one of the first thoughts rather than one of the last can be a helpful step for a lot of people. I mean, we love inclusivity in any way we can, but putting that forethought forward, trying to make sure that we're reaching out to, you know, different, there's a lot of businesses in town also that help support those things. So engaging with these different businesses that help support, you know, employment or accessibility or access or whatever it may be. But it does feel at times that, you know, they're almost two separate communities at times, right? There's the disabled community and those that are directly affected by it, whether it's families, caregivers, loved ones, and then people that don't have a direct impact in their life. And sometimes they almost seem like they run parallel rather than, you know, connecting and running together as the same group of people. So people trying to, you know, make those connections with those people and with those companies and businesses that are doing that can make a big difference, and just keeping that at the forethought with everything you plan.
Well, this new facility, I imagine, will allow for expanded workshops and perhaps even job opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. So right now we're still at the volunteer basis, and we're still early in the stages of funding. So far, you know, a lot of our funding has come from my wife and herself, as well as some, you know, people that have been very generous with supporting us. But as we build out and get this working, we do want to make sure that we have, you know, job opportunities available for those in the disabled community, but also helping them connect with other resources to help with job placement and job training, and being that in between to connect them from getting to that goal of working if that is something they want to do.
And when do you anticipate this building being ready?
That depends a little bit on funding at the moment. So right now we're really trying to be open in the next couple months, if we can be, to open the Play Center and start hosting resource events. We might be able to start hosting some groups and things sooner than that within the next month or two. But we really want the whole thing to be up and running by the end of summer. But some of that will depend on what kind of funding we can get, as we have some grants and things pending. But we're still looking for, you know, some local businesses to help sponsor or individuals to help support us with that, too.
Okay. Well, without a permanent facility yet, how can the community join the activities and support your current fundraising efforts?
We do have a facility now. So we're already renting. We already have the space to us. It's more of support to get the build out. So we already have the building. That's where we hosted our most recent event with the consignment sale as well.
I got you.
So if they, you know, any business or individual that goes to our website will find ways to either donate or reach out to us for sponsorship opportunities to help support those things.
Okay. And for listeners who want to volunteer, what's the best way for them to get in touch?
Our contact information, so our email on our website or on our Facebook, would be the easiest way to get in touch and sign up for that volunteer list.
Okay, that sounds like a plan. Thank you for the work that you do, Casey.
Thank you.
My guest